Good morning. I'll follow along and tag on to what Brother Jim said. Very good to see those of you visiting with us. Lots of faces we know, but there are several here this morning that may be our first time meeting you, and we are very grateful and thankful for you to be here this morning. Preachers sometimes say things that are, maybe I don't want to say controversial, but as Mike talked about, no one likes hearing things that make you feel or look inwardly and not like the things you're seeing, but I'm about to make a statement that I doubt that anyone here is going to have a problem with or will disagree with. Everyone likes to make money. I don't think there's one of us in here that is opposed to making a living and earning a living. There are lots of different ways in which you can make money. Some are legal, some not so legal, but most money is earned through a job or a career, some endeavor that you go about to earn that money. Some people do it by buying and trading stocks. Some have rental properties or simply just putting money in the bank and earning interest, though you're not going to retire on that amount of money that you would earn in that way. Even the Bible mentions that putting money in the bank and earning interest is the least you could do. The parable of the talents, the one talent man who didn't do anything with his money, is told you could have at least put it, given it to, you know, to the bankers, to the lenders, and given me back what I gave you with a little bit of interest. But he was punished because he hadn't even done that much. So what the master in that parable was interested in probably wasn't called then what we call it now, or it may have been, but it's called now ROI. Return on investment. Any business that offers a product or a service has to know and consider their ROI. They have to figure out how much any materials cost. They have to figure out how much their labor costs, any overhead, any taxes, any fees. All that has to go into account when they are deciding how much they're going to charge for that product or service, not to break even. No one goes into the business just to break even. You go into business to turn a profit. You go into business, you take a job, whatever the case may be, is the idea is that you're going to profit from that. Chris, in his business, I'm sure he has to know what his materials are going to cost, how much the men and different people that he hires that's going to cost him before he can price out a job to put, you know, an addition onto a house or whatever the case may be. He wouldn't be in business very long if he didn't take that into account. So, okay, very quick lesson in business. I'm sure I didn't break any new ground here. All of you could have had that thought, but I wanted to think if we thought of our lives here on earth in that way, and the reward that awaits us in heaven, if we thought of it in regards of a return on investment, there could be some very good lessons that we can learn from that concept. And so I want to look at a few ways that we can mention what I'm going to call our spiritual ROI. We get an ROI out of teaching others. We're commanded to teach others in several places. Just a few verses I just want to throw up here that we could look at. Colossians chapter 3, verse 16 reads, "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God." So we're to teach one another in these different ways that's mentioned here. Teaching, very front and center to that verse. Paul, while talking to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2, says, "And what you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." They are to pass on what you learn to others so they can go and do the same, and so forth and so forth. The very last words that the Gospel of Matthew covers are the words that are found in chapter 28 of Matthew, verses 19 and through 20, as the Lord is about to return back up to heaven. He says, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age." The last thing that Jesus tells his disciples is to go into all the world and teach. So you have no doubt that this is a central part of the life of a Christian. Just in this handful of verses, it is important to us that we do teach others. And that could be through an example, that could be through a direct contact. We need to be impacting others' lives by living our lives as a Christian. So, if we go back to my main point here about a return on investment, let's look at the teaching of others and how we can get a return on our investment. If we go to James chapter 5, verses 19 and 20, it reads, "My brothers, if any among you wanders from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins." Now, I realize this is talking about the restoration of someone who had been faithful and had fallen away, but I don't think it's limited to that. Teaching someone who's never known the truth and saving them can fit into this as well. James is telling the reader a few things here. As brothers and sisters to each other, or just as Christians out interacting with the world, we are to be watching for others and looking for them in order to teach them. We're to be looking for those who are lost. In this example, it's a brother who has wandered away. We're not told who it was, but it was someone, we can ascertain from the verse, as someone who did know the truth, but unlike this wandering brother, they have remained faithful. This faithful brother or sister notices that the errant brother is in peril. They have fallen away. They need help, though, to overcome this. They need to be brought back, and they need to be restored to the path that they were on. And this faithful person, they do what is necessary. They put in the work to be able to save this brother and to restore this brother. And so what is the return on their investment? And what they were investing in this brother was their time, their care, and their love. I don't think anyone would go into this situation wanting to have power or dominion over this person and then lord it over them. You wouldn't be where you're at if I hadn't brought you back. I don't believe for a second that's what's being taught here. What's being taught here is that you can have the love and care for your fellow man, brother, sister, whatever the case may be, and bring them back. And so the return on this time and care and love was this errant brother, their soul had been saved from death and from hell. And the sins that they had committed while they were lost, we're told they will be remembered no more. So the return on investment in this situation is this soul has been saved from death. And certainly a lifetime of gratitude from the brother who had been errant to the one that brought them back. Now, Paul counsels Timothy about how to handle a situation like this and provides two examples of those who had departed from the faith. So if we turn to 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 18 through 20, Paul telling Timothy says, "This charge I entrust to you, Timothy, my child, in accordance with the prophecies previously made about you, that by them you may wage the good warfare, holding faith and a good conscience. By rejecting this, some have made shipwreck of their faith, among whom are Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I have handed over to Satan, that they may learn not to blaspheme." He tells Timothy that he should stand guard and fight the good fight. You know how when you get on an airplane and they do the little safety speech at the beginning that no one pays attention to, but they're required to do so? They always say if you're traveling with a child and an emergency happens on the plane and the airbags drop down from the ceiling, what do they tell the adults? Take care of yourself first before you attend to the child. You need to make sure you're stabilized, that you're not going to be disoriented, because you won't be able to help them and then maybe help yourself. The reason being is they need to take care of themselves first before they can take care of others. This is no different what Paul is telling Timothy here. He's saying before Timothy can help others, he doesn't need to shipwreck his own faith. Timothy needs to secure himself so that he can help others. Just like the adult attending to the child, Timothy needs to be ready to attend to others. Timothy needs to strengthen himself first to the point, so he can fight for them. In the case here that Paul mentions about Hymenaeus and Alexander, I didn't want to get too bogged down into their situation, but there are people that think that Hymenaeus and Alexander are mentioned in other scriptures, and that in Alexander's case it says he did him wrong, and Hymenaeus had fallen away. Paul no doubt had tried to correct them, to bring them back as well. But they still destroyed their faith, Hymenaeus and Alexander is. They had destroyed their faith to the point that Paul had given up on them. He had given them over to Satan and allowed the devil to take them from there. So with that point, I do want to make an important point here. The company for which I work for, most of you may not even know what it is I do, but we are a lead generation company. We call on behalf of businesses, talking to other businesses, trying to find out if they have a need for the product or the service that our client offers. I don't necessarily do that so much anymore. I did 5-6 years ago when I was just starting with the company. But we would generate these leads and then share them with our client with the idea that their salespeople would pick up the phone or email or go visit them and have a conversation in the hopes of turning that lead into a sale. Now, over the years, like when my job was to actually generate those leads, I've had a lot of conversations that when I got off the phone with that person, I knew they have a need for my client's product or service. This is going to be a no-doubter. When they pick up the phone, they're going to have a good conversation. It's going to then go down the line towards a sale. At some point in our relationship with our clients, we do reviews. And at some point in that conversation, we'll ask them about how the campaign is working. And many times we would hear back, well, yeah, you gave us a lot of leads, but they didn't amount to anything. We didn't make a single sale out of anything we were able to provide to them. They were not seeing that any return on investment had been delivered out of what, or had been generated out of what we had delivered to them. But they were looking at it the wrong way. We weren't presenting a for sure sale to them. We were giving them a lead, an opportunity, nothing more. They still had to put in the work. And so many times when we would be having these reviews, we would ask them, well, this contact was so, you know, passionate about what they needed. They were so sure they wanted to talk to you. Well, what happened? And it's amazing how many times we would have the salesperson say, yeah, I called him once. He wasn't there. I left a voicemail. I moved on. We were being held accountable to their sales team not putting in the work. And so that was something we always tried to impress upon them. You can't hold us as a return on investment based upon sales. You have to look at what we delivered and the potential of what might have been there. Okay, that's great, Alan. Why are you saying this? The reason why I'm saying this is because as we try to teach others, we can't base our effectiveness, our success, on baptisms. Ultimately, we cannot make someone respond to the gospel. We need to just put in the work. And there is a very well-known biblical example that talks about this. If we look at Matthew chapter 13, we're going to read a few passages out of Matthew 13. Verses 1 through 9 reads, "That same day Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea, and great crowds gathered about him so that he got into a boat and sat down. And the whole crowd stood on the beach, and he told them many things in parables, saying, A sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell among the path, and the birds came and devoured them. Other seeds fell on rocky ground, where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up, since they had no depth of soil, but when the sun rose, they were scorched. And since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and produced grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears, let him hear." And then a few passages or verses later in the same chapter, in verses 18 through 23, Jesus is explaining what that parable means. "Here then is the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is what was sown along the path. As for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures for a while. And when tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately he falls away. As for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. As for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it. He indeed bears fruit and yields, in one case 100-fold, in another 60, and in another 30. So when you're considering your spiritual ROI, you can think of yourself here as the sower found in this parable. Speaking to friends and family or someone you just so happen to meet and telling them about the gospel, you're doing what the sower is doing. You're spreading the seed that is the word of God. It's the same seed as indicated in verse 19 that you are spreading, that the sower is spreading. But no more than the sower was responsible for the different receivers of the seed and what happened. We're not told that the sower was held responsible for those that got choked out by the thorns or, you know, the shallow ground and died out. We too are not going to be judged by those that receive the word. Our responsibility is to spread the gospel. And it is on that which we will be judged. If we don't put in the work, we're no better than those salespeople that had those great leads and didn't do anything with them. Whether we spread it or not is what we will be judged upon. So that is where we need to be focusing our time and our care and our love. So then, what is our own personal ROI? When we're not teaching others, when we're looking at ourselves, what is the return on investment of our spiritual life? As we read earlier, Paul had to encourage Timothy to fight the good fight and to maintain his faith and to be able to do all this with a clean conscience or a good conscience. There are times that we all struggle with wanting and trying to do the right thing. So it doesn't hurt for us to recognize that there are things awaiting us that can be used as motivation to help us through those times where we're struggling. Whether it's struggling with our own faith, whether it's struggling with trying to spread the gospel and talk to others about it, there are going to be times that we are just not at the top of our game. And motivation is a great thing. In life, my job, I make a commission if I make a sale. That's a nice motivator. But for our spiritual ROI, there's a return that's a lot more important and a lot more valuable than just a commission. We even sing a song, "Heaven Will Surely Be Worth It All." That song talks about there's going to be times where you're persecuted, you're not received well, whatever the case may be, whatever we go through on this earth, heaven will surely be worth it all. There's a verse which I feel encapsulates this thought very well. It's one of my favorite verses. Romans chapter 8, verse 18. "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us." Not every day is going to be our best, and we're certainly going to have bad ones. But we're told that while our sufferings here may seem great, this verse tells us that as bad a days that we've had on this earth, the glory that awaits us in heaven is exponentially better than our worst day here on earth. I don't know about you, I've had some really bad days. And the fact that there's something awaiting me that's so much on the other side of the spectrum, that's a big motivator. And we're told these things to motivate us. And so, what is awaiting for us in heaven? And after I mention these things, the lesson will be yours. In heaven, we get new bodies. These bodies break down, but we're told that we will have a new body. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 1 through 4 reads, "For we know that if the tent that is our earthly home is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this tent we groan, longing to put on our heavenly dwelling, if indeed by putting it on we may not be found naked. For while we are still in this tent, we groan, being burdened, not that we would be unclothed, but that we would be further clothed, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life." To clarify, the mention of being further clothed is a reference to leaving our physical bodies and inheriting a spiritual representation of a body. By being further clothed in this sense, we're talking about an upgrade. Everybody likes upgrades. We're going to receive an upgrade in our body. Our present bodies were not meant to be permanent. They will rot. They will decay. They will break down. I don't know about you, I got my second COVID shot on Friday, and I've had a rough weekend. My back was killing me yesterday, and bodies are meant to do that, but not the body that's awaiting for us, that's awaiting us in heaven. And so if you can look at that as a motivation, as a great return on the investment of your time and devotion here on earth, then that's a wonderful thing to look at. I don't know about you, but the houses we live in, they break down. I've got several projects right now that I need to take care of. But we will receive a custom-built house awaiting for us in heaven. John chapter 14, verses 1 through 3. "Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may also be." Jesus had just told them that Peter was going to deny them three times. I'm sure the mood there was pretty grim, pretty sullen. And so he pivots to telling them something very uplifting, something very motivating. That he's going somewhere where right now they're not going to be able to follow him. But while he's there, before they join him there, that he's going to be preparing a place for them. That once that's established and it's ready for him, he's going to come back for them. And that they will be with him in that place. In that home which is awaiting all of us in heaven. I don't for a second believe that Jesus is talking about building these homes for just those who are in his presence. I think that's a guarantee for all of us that if we live our lives and remain faithful to death, we have that home awaiting for us in heaven. As most of you know, my father died when I was very young, and that one of the only things I remember about him was that he loved to lead the song Mansions Over the Hilltop. And so that song always has a special place in my heart. But that's what's awaiting us. It's awaiting us in heaven, and I guarantee you we're never going to have to call the plumber, we're never going to have to call the exterminator, whatever the case may be. This is a home that is going to be waiting for us, and that should be a wonderful motivator for us. We can focus on the things that are awaiting us there, but maybe more so, we could focus on some of the things that aren't going to be there. Some of the very things that make our lives, our days, bad are not going to be there awaiting us in heaven. If we look in Revelation chapter 7, I'm going to read verses 13 through 17. "Then one of the elders addressed me, saying, 'Who are these clothed in white robes, and from where have they come?' I said to him, 'Sir, you know.' And he said to me, 'These are the ones coming out of the great tribulation. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore, they are before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will shelter them with his presence. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst anymore. The sun will not strike them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb in the midst of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to springs of living water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. No more hunger. No more thirst. No more sunburns from out doing work in the sun. And no more tears. He's going to wipe them away because there's not going to be any need for sorrow. There's not going to be any place for sorrow in heaven. But these things are not promised to everyone. This is a return on investment for those that have dedicated their lives to following him. Those who serve him night and day, those that stay faithful and have had their sins washed away. We shall have pure, unhindered happiness awaiting us there. I want to close by reading one last passage. Philippians chapter 3, verses 20 and 21. Well, that is the wrong passage, so I will read it to you. Philippians chapter 3, 20 through 21. But our citizenship is in heaven, and from it we await a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, who will transform our lowly body to be like his glorious body by the power that enables him even to subject all things to himself. What a wonderful thought. That our citizenship is not here on this earth. Our citizenship is awaiting us in heaven. I already talked about we're going to get new bodies, but this passage tells us that our bodies are going to be just like his, just like Christ. But it's only promised to those who maintain their faith. And what awaits those who do not maintain their faith, or maybe didn't have a faith to begin with? Well, we only need to look at verses 18 and 19, and those are the verses I had on the page. Of the very same chapter, if we go back just a few verses earlier, Philippians chapter 3, verses 18 and 19. For many of whom I have often told you, and now tell you even with tears, walk as enemies of the cross of Christ. Their end is destruction. Their God is their belly, and they glory in their shame, with minds set on earthly things. Those who are not faithful to God are enemies to God and to Christ. If they don't worship and follow him, they're his enemies. All that is awaiting them, as we're told in this passage, is destruction. It says that they have their mind set on earthly things. It says that their God is their belly and their glory is their shame. I don't think we have to look too far in this world to recognize that there are people that just try to outdo each other in how over the top they can be and have sin in their lives. That's who we're talking about here. People that are not looking to Christ for their answers, but are looking to the world and to each other for their answers. And destruction awaits them. But anyone here this morning, listening to me, you still have time to make sure that you're not headed to destruction. But you can make sure that you are heading towards that home that awaits us in heaven, where those things that we talked about, the new bodies, the new homes, the lack of irritants that we have here on earth that will not be there. What a wonderful motivation and what a wonderful return on the investment that we put in to live a faithful life. If you're here this morning and, well, to start, if you're here this morning and you've dedicated your life once to Christ and you find yourself not fulfilling yourself the way or fulfilling your obligations the way you know you should. You're like the one that Paul was telling Timothy. You need to go to them. They need to be brought back. You need to be brought back. And you can save your soul from death. You can save your soul from hell. And that is done through in reinvesting your life towards Christ and towards heaven. But if you're here this morning and you've never taken the step of becoming a follower of Christ, never confessed his name in front of others and decided to dedicate your life to Him. Like I said, you're hearing my voice this morning. The waters behind me are ready for baptism. You can come forward and let us know that you realize that destruction is not where you want to be. That's not a very good motivator. Maybe the motivation is you don't want to face destruction. But more importantly, the motivator should be the home that's awaiting us in heaven. If any of you here this morning have any reason to come forward, we ask you to come now as we stand and as we sing.